Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
Well, okay. I'm Troy.
And I'm MC.
Yeah, I was waiting for him to intro the show, but he's slurping a beverage, so he can't.
Yeah. And this is the best animated shows ever. So far. Where we watch, discuss, and rank every animated show. Eventually. And today we're watching episode 1 of ExoSquad, Pirate Scourge, Fall of the Human Empire, part 1.
Mm-hmm. We are getting into ExoSquad today. This is one... that have like been low key. It's been low key on my list for a long time because I remember, well, what I remember is really liking the toys. I remember liking the show, but I remember really liking the toys. So we'll talk a little bit about some background stuff here before we get into episode 1, Pirate Scourge. You didn't watch this show, right? When you were a kid?
No.
Okay. So I know I watched the show. I know I had the toys. The toys were great because the toys are just, they're the mech suits that are in this. And you had a little figure that was about the size of a typical G.I. Joe. And then you'd go into the mech suit. And in the show, they fly these mech suits around. And there's like a neural link thing that plugs into the back of their necks. That's how they control the mech suit. And the toys had that. So they had a little hole in the back of their neck. And there was a little like flexible plastic piece that you'd plug into the neck. It was great. Anyway, this show ran from September 18th of 1993 to November 3rd of 1994. So just over a year. It was technically 2 seasons at 52 episodes. And what sucks is that it was popular as it was canceled. Like, this show was doing well when it was canceled. Apparently, there was like a weird thing going on where there was companies being taken over. And this show is being produced by Universal Cartoon Studios from Universal Pictures. And there was all these rumors about shows getting bought up and stuff. And they just like dropped it, even though it was doing really well at the time that it was canceled. And that sucks. The show was conceived of by a guy named Jeff Siegel. His big claim to fame before this was that he worked on Challenge of the GoBots, which was a show that was inspired by the GoBots toys. So on that one, the toys came first, and then he made the show. And then on this one, he's like, I want to go make another show where I can sell some more toys. We're going to make another robot boat show. And came up with the idea for ExoSquad. It was called ExoForce at the time. But then the idea got adapted and it ended up being mechs instead of robots. And it sounds like even though he's credited with creating the show, there's 2 other guys who really probably had more to do with actually creating the show. And that's Will Mignot and Michael Edens. Will Mignot on the art side of things, Michael Edens on the story side of things. So let's go look at a little bit of what they've done. Michael Edens, like I said, he was part of the kind of story structure of this show. The show is very inspired by anime. It's got a lot of like long running plots and interweaving story arcs and things. And so I think that Michael Edens deserves a lot of credit for really helping to craft a very in-depth world. He also worked on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original one, which we weren't as impressed by how intricate of a world that show had when we reviewed it. And then he worked on Sonic Underground, which was the cool Sonic show. Do you remember that one? This is like the punk rock Sonic where he had like a guy with a mohawk that was his friend. Did you say a beard?
A band.
Oh, I thought you said a beard. And I was like, no, Sonic didn't have a beard. What would that even look like? Would you... If Sonic had a beard, would you still see the pale part around his mouth, or would that all be covered in beard? It would be blue. Wow. Anyway.
He would just have a blue face.
There's one other show he's known for working on, MC. And I'm so mad at you, MC. I'm so mad at you. Because the other show that Michael Edens is known for working on is a show called Stargate Infinity. That you've never mentioned to me.
Because I'm waiting for you to get through Stargate SG-1 before I introduce you to, like, Atlantis, Infinity. There's a couple of other movies that they've made since the end of the show as well.
But MC, Continuum, there's a Stargate cartoon, and you never mentioned it to MC. I'm watching Stargate, and we host a cartoons podcast together, and you never thought to mention that there's a Stargate cartoon?
I mean, I don't even remember it all that well, to be honest.
Well, don't you worry, because I've done some research on it while I was waiting for you here. Stargate Infinity is set way after SG-1. It is in the future, so we're watching a future version of Stargate Command. It's 30 years, excuse me. I thought it was 300 is what I read earlier. 30 years. 30 years in the future. Following a future version of Stargate Command, which means that it probably, as soon as Atlantis started, was non-canon because they were like, screw that, we're not going to behold ourselves to a cartoon that's set 30 years in the future. So it's a non-canon Stargate cartoon. I could feasibly watch this anytime. I don't know how much crossover there is. I don't know. But anyway, co-creator Brad Wright of Stargate SG-1 was asked about it, and he was like, no, it's not canon. And then he's the full comment is, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just not involved. And come on, Brad Wright. We all know that's code for, like, fuck that cartoon. I don't want to have anything to do with it. Like, that is the least subtle, like, screw the cartoon. Who cares about the cartoon? I'm trying to make a serious science fiction show over here with your cartoon. Anyway, so that's what Michael Edens is known for. Will Mignot, on the other hand, is known, the thing he's most known for is the secret files of the spy dogs. Which I have no idea what that is. But then the rest of his list, weirdly, Exo Squad isn't on this list, which is weird because I think that the, like, character design and the Exo Squad models and stuff are all beautiful in Exo Squad. I think they did a really good job with that. So it's weird that he's not listed as known for that. But what he is known for is the real Ghostbusters. Mm. Fantastic.
Oh, yes.
Captain Planet and the Planeteers. And Spider-Man Unlimited.
Oh, he's done a lot of good work.
He's worked on the Superhero Squad. He's worked on the new Biker Mice from Mars. He's worked on several Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series. He's worked on X-Men Evolution. This guy's been around. He helped storyboard Days of Future Past on X-Men the Animated Series. So yeah, dude's done some stuff. So there's some good, like, pedigree behind Exo Squad, and I think that that's clear when you watch it, because my memory of this show, like I said, was the toys. I thought the show was going to be shit, but it's not. And it wasn't seen as shit at the time. Like, people really liked this show. There are quotes calling it no ordinary cartoon and truly a superb piece of work and a kind show. I think I'm supposed to say a kind of show that one will never forget. And even one of the greatest anime epics ever made. Which it's not, because it's not anime, but outside of, like, if you ignore the fact that it's not anime, it's totally a great anime. Like, it has all of the trappings of an excellent anime story. It just happens to be a Western cartoon. I'm really excited about this one, MC. Can you tell? I'm very excited.
Yeah. Well, I gotta say, I really enjoyed the show. Right at the start, we get, like, essentially a rundown of what's happened in this future time with the Neo-Humans and them being pretty much slaves and an uprising on Mars and Venus and...
Well, like, hang on. Before you get too far, MC, we haven't gone to the commercial break yet. So let's do this. Before we go to the commercial break, let me just pull the recap, right? The intro that is on every single episode. Do I dare just edit it in here? I could do that.
Yeah.
Should I do that?
Do that.
All right. We're going to listen to that, and then we'll be right back after these messages.
It was a golden age for all mankind. Using the incredible exoskeletons called E-frames, we had successfully terraformed Venus and Mars and were poised to move on to the outer planets. Suddenly, it all ended. We were pressed into a nightmarish war on a scale previously unimagined. We were attacked by our own creations, the Neo Sapiens, a race of artificially created humans. Led by Phaeton, they have seized control of Venus, Earth, and Mars. This is Lieutenant J.T. Marsh, member of the Exofleet, leader of a small band of E-frame pilots dedicated to freeing humanity from Neo-Sapien rule. We are the Exo Squad.
Hey everyone, Scott here with my good pal Rich. Say hi, Rich.
Hi.
And we're here today to tell you about a podcast we host together with our buddies Jay and Bill, the RPG After Years.
The After what?
The RPG After Years. Our show has entered into a new era of covering everything RPGs, both old and new. Thus, it is after its first era. It's the After Years.
I thought RPG was rocket propelled grenade.
No, RPG stands for role playing game. It's a genre of video game. Every week, we go through the latest news and discuss other relevant RPG-related topics. We also review RPGs as we complete them.
So an RPG is not a rabid Portuguese goose?
No, thank God. From Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy to The Witcher and Cyberpunk, we've got RPGs covered from the dawn of time to the far-flung future.
Oh, I've heard of Final Fantasy.
I'd hope so. So check us out on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening platform happens to be. You can also find us at probablywork.com. Level up your podcast feed with the RPG After Years.
Enjoy the show.
And we're back.
We are back. We are back. We are back to talk about Exo Squad Season 1. Episode 1, Pirate Scourge, and what... Okay, so we listened to that recap, right? Oh, there was some shit, and humanity made a race of slaves, and the slaves rose up against them, and then we had peace again. And then the show starts, and Charles McKenna is giving us a news report of the exact same thing. And I'm not going to lie, I was a little confused about the timeline. So... I found a website called Exo Squad Archive. They actually found us on Instagram, talked to them a little bit, and they have all kinds of stuff about Exo Squad, including the show Bible for Exo Squad, which I read more of than I would like to admit. But if you want to know a lot about the timeline of Exo Squad, the show Bible has like a very thorough breakdown. But essentially... there was an uprising where these Neo Sapiens, that are these genetically bred slaves that humanity made, rose up. They took Mars, the Neo Sapiens did, and then a truce was made. So basically, the Neo Sapiens are in control of Mars, but are still subjugated by humanity. Like, we let them hang out on Mars. But they're not allowed to have weapons, and there's very much still a dominated race. It reminded me a lot, actually, we've learned about Japan in World War II, the whole treaty that was established there. Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, also, it makes, like, the start of this episode when they take a trip to Olympus Mons, like, make no sense because the Neo-Sapiens are coming along with some guns.
Right, they attack them with tanks. And so first of all, the first time we meet our heroes, they're trespassing. And second of all, they're getting shot at by the species that isn't allowed to have guns. I was confused about that. I assumed that it was like specifically supposed to be a metaphor for the treaty that was established with Japan that allows them to defend within their borders but not take military action outside of their borders. And so I think that it's not that they can't have... I reinterpreted it that it's not that they can't have weapons, but they can't have a standing military. But they are allowed to have security forces.
A security.
As we learn, piracy is a big issue in the world of Exo Squad. There are pirates that are just attacking ships all over the place, including that guy who was watching the Charles McKenna news report while his buddy, like, played a pornographic video game, they get attacked by pirates, and that's not cool.
This show has a lot of adult stuff in it.
It does.
Like, injuries, like, war, shooting.
Outright dying. Death. Like, conversations about racism and slavery and pornographic video games. And it was really weird. He's playing a little game and it's just a porno girl. It reminded me of when Riker was watching the hologram of a girl playing a cello and you're like, Riker, where's this going? Where's this going, Riker? I have questions. Anyway, so the Exo Squad is the team that we meet is led by JT Marsh, and there's a whole bunch of people on his team. But essentially, they've been joyriding on Mars. They go back and they get in trouble with it because Captain Marcus, who is one of their superior officers, is like, "You dumb shits, were you joyriding on Mars?" And they're like, "No, we would never break interplanetary treaties by joyriding on Mars." What I'm getting at is I think that they're kind of jerks. JT Marsh is kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be joyriding on Mars.
Here's the thing, but we don't get it in this part, but they're definitely not the most jerky of jerks in the solar system at this point. Because we run into pirates, like, not too far after this.
Right.
They essentially kidnap, they capture a ship.
Yeah,
potentially kill its crew and leave it stranded. Like,
yeah, and that's the mission the team actually gets sent on, is that they're going to go investigate this this ship that the pirates attacked and sent out a distress call. And what's weird about this is, okay, this show, a starting point for this show was let's sell some toys. And so the first time we see our heroes, they're in their toys, their E-frames, their big mech suits, and they're flying around with them because, hey, I want to buy those toys. But the first time they actually go on a mission, they're not. They just take a shuttle over to another ship, and then they're wandering around the ship in spacesuits. And I thought that was kind of surprising.
I mean, we get to see more of the actual characters,
mm-hmm.
and they've got some really funky hair.
Oh my
especially
god.
Especially for being in a military force. There's, like, a guy who has, like, a curly buffon on, like, he massive hair in front of his head, like, it's...
Uh-huh.
Oh my
sticks
god.
Out, like, 2 feet in front of him. There's, like, everybody has the side of their heads some kind of shaved. Nobody has the full side of their hair. The girls have the sides of their heads shaved and have big flocks of hair sticking out forward. I love the hair on this show. I want this hair. I want all of it.
The only one who doesn't have crazy hair is the Neo-Sapien who's on their team.
That's true. They have Marsala, the Neo-Sapien, as part of their group, and he doesn't have hair because Neo-Sapiens don't have hair. Did we mention, MC, that the Neo-Sapiens are a genetically engineered race of slaves that humanity created? They're slaves.
And
they're a slave race.
Yeah, and they're purple, and they've got like four fingers instead of five.
Do you know why they're blue, I would call them. But do you know why they're that color, MC?
Why?
Because they're genetically engineered to be slave workers on the surface of Mars, and the surface of Mars is red, so them being blue makes them easy to spot on the surface of Mars, presumably so that your slaves can't run away.
I mean, oh my god. Oh, this is so bad. But yes, I can see why that might be a thing.
So I went back to that show Bible, and there's a particular line I want to call out, which is that the Neo-Sapiens were developed on June 2nd of 2040, scientists succeed in creating a new strain of evolutionarily advanced humans known as Neo-Sapiens. So that was in 2040. In 2060, we're jumping ahead a little bit here, exotechnologies are modified for military use. So originally these exosuits were built for mining purposes, for mining on Mars and for terraforming Venus. But then they were like, we just make a slave race to do that. So then they're like, well, let's start using those exosuits for military. So 2060, 20 years after we developed the slave race, is when they start using those as a military operation. They form ExoForce and the ExoForce Operations Network to deal with space pirates and possible military emergencies. And at the same time, in 2060, the great Neo-Sapien birthing centers of Mars are completed. Now, at these great Neo-Sapien birthing centers, accelerated growth and intracranial organo-education implants produce blank Neo-Sapien adults each Martian month. I just want you to take a guess. How many adult Neo-Sapiens are produced each month? Remembering that they have accelerated growth, and also they apparently have intracranial organo-education implants, which means that they just...
5,000.
How many?
5,000.
25,000 a month.
What?
25,000 a month. We'll just... Hey.
That's insane.
Humanity just said, let's make 25,000 slaves a month. This'll be fine. This is definitely not going to go bad for us. You dumb... You deserve to have an upheaval against you. And then... In 2065, 5 years later, the population of Neo-Sapiens had increased rapidly. Mars is predominantly populated by these advanced humans. Unrest begins on Mars in wake of the Homeworld Senate's decision that artificial, quote-unquote, life forms don't have the rights of other natural humans. So this is where the rebellion really starts, because they're like, we've been making 25,000 of you a month for 5 years, and you don't have any rights. What do you mean rights? Humanity sucks in ExoSquad, MC. And it's very strange.
And the pirates really put that to base as well, because when the ExoSquad finally does get on that ship and does that mission that you're talking about where they're not in their exosuits, they find one person alive, except he's trapped under some bulkhead or something. And when it gets lifted off of him, there's a bomb. Mm-hmm. And it's going to blow up. And the repair crew that is getting sent there, it doesn't reply to their communication.
Oh, God.
Okay. So they have to try and cut them off.
Time out. I'm slowing you down. We got to slow down on this because it's nuts. So the ExoSquad Alpha team got sent in first, but there's a repair shuttle on its way over. And so the ExoSquads are all hanging out on the ship, having a good time investigating dead bodies and stuff, while the repair ship is puttering closer and closer to the pirate ship. And then Takagi, the new guy on the team, is like, I found a guy who's alive, and lifts the thing off of him and sets off the bomb. The bomb's going to take like a minute to explode. So the ExoSquad has to freaking book it to back to their ship to get out of there. And for some reason, they can't raise the repair ship on comms. So the ExoSquad team's booking it away from the pirate ship that is now a big bomb, while the repair truck is booking it towards the pirate ship that's a big bomb. Now you may continue.
Not a pirate ship. It's an independent...
Carrier
or something, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're saving someone, and they're pulling this one survivor out, and essentially, because this bomb is too close to the repair ship blows up as well. So, we've already seen multiple deaths and implied deaths on this show, like, and we're like halfway through the first episode.
The whole work crew that was on the repair ship die.
Yeah. Although the ExoSquad get out of it just barely.
Yep. I think it's later, but I'll talk about it now here, that report that we saw at the beginning is like on the ExoFleet ships. It is later, but it's attached to this. And he goes to interview JT Marsh and his team and is like, hey, I hear it was your guys' fault all those people died. And they're like, fuck off, man, leave us alone. But he's not wrong about it.
No.
Is the thing. It's intense. Anyway, back at the Homeworlds Congress, there's a debate going on being like, hey, these pirates are way more shitty than they used to be, and we should probably do something about it. And there's back and forth on whether or not they should do something about it. And then they invite Phaeton, who was the leader of the Neo-Sapien Rebellion 50 years ago and is now the Governor General of the Martian Commonwealth, to speak. And he's like, man, listen, war's terrible. We did a war. It was bad for everybody. but these pirates are awful. You should probably do something about it. And everyone's like, yeah, make the Exo Squad earn their keep. Those suckers are just getting paid fat stacks of cash for not doing anything. We should probably have a war now.
Yeah. And the underlying tone of, oh, what's his name?
Phaeton.
Phaeton. The underlying thing is like, yes, send the Exo Squad away from Mars so they won't investigate what's happening at Olympus Mons.
No, shh, MC, shh, we don't know that yet.
Well, I haven't seen anything that doesn't imply that, like, in this episode.
So anyway, the Exo Fleet is gonna take off, and there's like a nice little montage of like all the ships getting together and stuff, and they're all headed out to go deal with a bunch of pirates who have cloaking devices, apparently. Lucky pirates.
Of course, because of the explosion, a couple of the Exo Squad members have been injured, so we get a few like scenes of like, hey, he's injured, why can't I go on a mission if he's injured as well? And it's like, oh, you've got a concussion, he's just broken his ribs.
He's got some
whatever
cracked ribs. You've got a concussion. Yeah. Sit down.
yeah if you can't see straight, you can't shoot straight. And of course, in that whole thing is of course like the reporter being nosy and kind of an asshole.
I mean, a
but,
little bit.
Yeah, the pirates.
Right.
Yeah.
These pirates have a cool trap, though, because they've got cloaking devices and they're hiding in an asteroid belt, and they've put rockets on the asteroids. And so the Exo Fleet shows up, and they're like, oh, there's a rogue asteroid coming towards us. No big deal. We'll just move out of the way. Oh, there's another one, and another one, and they're following. So, oh, my God, they're bombs. And they just start pelting them with asteroids while their ships decloak and start shooting them. It's super cool. I love it.
And then send out the Exo Squad in their A-frames.
Mm-hmm. And the advantage of these E-frames, these small ships, I mean, it's essentially what you get where you have, like, a big heavy fighter, or a big heavy warship, and then you have fighters that are more nimble and maneuverable and stuff. But these fighters, being little mechs, are even more nimble and maneuverable. And you know, it gets into, you know, a shooty-shooty space battle here, but it's all, like, super well animated and intense, and there's like shots where it will show someone in like a gunner's turret, and you see them, and then you see that gunner's turret blow up, and they're like, we're gonna make sure that you know that people are dying in this cartoon. They're not so at all.
And right before like they go out into the shooty shooty battle, we get the scene with the things plugging, the exosuits plugging into the back of their necks.
Yep.
It's all that sort of. And then we get the shooty-shooty space battle. And no one seems to really win or lose this battle. It's like the pirates just sort of run away at some point.
Some of the pirates are retreating, but this episode just ends like in the middle of the battle as like JT Marsh, the leader of the Exo Squad, has been shot and is like spiraling out of control. And that's it, right?
Yeah. They're still like in the middle of battle, and it's like, I have a feeling like it's like, oh, they're in trouble, but it's like they don't really finish the episode with like, hey, everyone's going to be fine, like you expect like shows to do.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I think of the shows we've watched that have had this 5-part opener, which seems to be a pretty common thing. I know we had it with Gargoyles and with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I feel like there's another one that I'm forgetting. But this one is the one that feels the most to me like episode one. So the way this episode ends, or rather earlier in the episode when it goes to commercial, it goes like, Exo Squad, we'll be right back. And it shows, you know, one of the characters in like a cool action portrait. And then when it comes back from commercial, it's like, and now back to Exo Squad. And that's what it does at the end of this. Like, it just goes to commercial and you're like, okay, I can't wait to see what happens next, because this has been really intense. And then it's like, and now back to Exo Squad. And it's like, next time on Exo Squad. And you're like, wait, what? That's the episode's over?
Yeah.
It can't end there. That's not the end of an episode. But it is. It is the end of the episode. Which means, MC, it's time for the best and the worst, with the worst first. MC, I'm going to go first. Haha, I tricked you. So one of the guys on the Exo Squad team, his name is Wolf Bronski, and he's a big fat man, and he drinks a lot of beer, even though it's a cartoon, so they don't explicitly say it's beer, but it's clearly beer. And my specific worst thing is that there's a part, is it in this episode? I hope it's in this episode. If it's not, then just pretend it was in this episode, where they say something about, like, hey, Bronski, they might have a nasty surprise for us up ahead. And Bronski goes, no one's nastier than Wolf Bronski. And then he burps. And he's inside of his exoskeleton when he burps, MC. And my worst thing is imagining the smell of that man inside of his exosuit.
Here's the thing. I saw a lot of the bad things that he was eating and drinking throughout this episode. I don't think he even needs to have a bodily excretion, like a burp or a fart, to make that the inside of that suit smell funky as hell.
You're because absolutely that right. Dude
gives off funky smell vibes.
What makes this the worst for me is that I feel like that burp was an invitation from the creators of the show saying, hey, Troy, he just burped inside of his suit. Why don't you just take a moment and just imagine what it smells like in there after that burp? And when I did that, I realized that there would be so many smells, MC. It wouldn't just be that burp. There would be so many smells.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, that was my worst thing.
My
I hope that was this worst, episode.
My worst thing is, like, they're betraying humans as the bad guys and the good guys, and the Neo-humans as also bad guys and good guys. And it's like, okay, so it's clear we're not supposed to have one side that we're supposed to barrack for in this show. But come on, it's supposed to be, like, four kids selling toys and stuff. Like, what side are we supposed to be on? But it's like, you're supposed to be on the Exo Squad side. The one that's not, like, terribly, like, xenophobic or, you know, plotting against everyone else. They're just doing what they're ordered to do.
But even that's complicated a bit.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think that's what makes it a good show to watch for me to watch now as you know, a 30-something man that I am now. But as a kid, yeah, that would be, like, as a kid, having the good guys be humans who are in a war with the slave race that they created is perplexing because that sucks. Like,
yeah, no, there's too many, like, complicated moral, like, intrigues in this show that I think a younger person probably wouldn't get. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think a kid gets all the underlying stuff that's happening in this show. Whereas me watching it as a 30-something year old, I was like, holy crap, this is intense. And yeah. I was like, okay, I have one side that's purely bad because everyone doesn't like them. But these two other sides, it's like, I don't know who I'm supposed to be, whose side I'm supposed to be on. Like,
we can all agree that the pirates suck, but...
Yeah. Between the Neo-humans and the human-humans, it's like, can't choose a side. I guess I'm just going to have to wait and see more.
Yeah.
But that's also part of the reason why this is, like, the best thing about this show, I would have to say, is, like, it's, like, hidden in, like, a kid's show for toys, but it's got a lot of adult, like, humor and, like, nuance to it. Like, I think it's something that, I'm going to continue to watch and enjoy.
Out of curiosity, how much have you watched at this point? Have you just watched this first episode or?
The first two.
The first two? Okay. I've watched six, and we're only talking about three. and the opening arc is only 5. So that probably tells you something about how I'm feeling about it. Yeah. The complexity is something that I dig about it, and the darkness of it is something that I dig. And specifically, my best moment was one of the characters when they're doing that montage scene of like the Exo fleet, you know, all getting geared up to go to war with the pirates. One of the characters, Nara Burns, who anyway, she's sitting in her bunk writing a letter home. And it's kind of this small touching moment where she's writing back to her family, lives on Venus, and they run a farm, and she's, you know, writing to mom and dad and her little brother, and hope everything's great there. And, you know, I know you weren't sure about me joining the Exo fleet, but it has given me the opportunity to go all over the world or all over the galaxy. And she says it will take, we're, you know, so many miles away from Venus, so it'll take over an hour for this video to reach you. And by the time it reaches you, I might be. And then she kind of pauses and she goes, well, anyway, we might be, you know, busy by then or something like that. And like, girl's thinking about dying. That's the subtext there. Yeah. That was her letter home in case she dies in battle. And
that happens again in the next episode.
Does it happen there too?
It's just, yeah.
You can't, you have a children's cartoon where one of your main characters in the first episode is like, anyway, I might die. So that's cool. Fun being in the military, sure, is great. Like, wow. Anyway, I think that was very cool. Very, very cool. You got anything else about this episode, MC?
No, I enjoyed it, to be honest.
I did too. I really liked it. I'm really excited to keep watching it. But before we go, before we say goodbye to the good people, we did space as our last theme for a show to watch, and I'm curious if you have a thought for a theme for our next time around that people can start thinking on.
I don't actually.
Okay.
Maybe fantasy, since we did space.
Okay.
Go fantasy. So, you know, get that sci-fi fantasy sort of back to back.
Like some sword and sorcery style fantasy, something with magic in it.
Oh yeah.
That kind of stuff.
I know a few. I already know a few that will probably come up.
All right. I like it. I like it. We'll do that for our next category. After that, MC, I might want to do Pokemon. I've been watching a lot of Pokemon and I'm almost done with the first anime, which means that for no Pokemon. Anyway, we'll figure that out in the future, though, MC. I think that's all we've got for Pirate Scourge. I think this is really cool. If you are listening along to this and you have not watched Exo Squad ever or since you were a kid, like, this is episode one of a cartoon that we've watched that I think I can most wholeheartedly be like, check this one out. It's interesting. It is doing interesting things for a cartoon. And if you're in the US, it's free on Peacock. So the NBC has this new streaming app called Peacock. And it's just there. You can just go watch all of Exo Squad. It's ad free. It's great. So I would recommend it. Check it out. I think you'll like it. Next time around, we'll watch Fall of the Human Empire Part 2, Seeds of Deception. I wonder who's being deceitful, MC. Who could it be? Anyway. I don't remember how we end this show, MC. I've been trying so hard. Thank you. Oh, God. Don't change. MC, we just recorded Too Young for This Track. If you don't listen to Too Young for This Track, don't go listen to this week's Too Young for This Track. I don't know what happened. I think there was a gas link in our Zoom room, and we all got a little loopy. And I've been trying so hard to be like, I'm trying to be a good boy, MC, for our best animated show that we're so far recording. And then I forgot how our show ended, and I just panicked.
It was great. You guys broke me in like the first 15-20 minutes and the show went off the rails, and every time I tried to get it back on the rails, it was like, no, we're gonna interrupt you with a joke right now, and I crack up again.
I don't know what happened. It was very strange. I stood up and I stumbled like I was drunk, and I was like, what is happening right now?
I got lightheaded too.
Anyway,
We'll be back next time with Seeds of Deception. Until then, MC.
Don't change the channel.
Thanks for listening to the best animated shows ever, so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFCast or email us at BaseSFCast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFCast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.